Right now, the sports world is unsure when the seasons will resume and where they're going to be played. It is certain that they're not going to be fans. And I believe the NBA, the players were asked what they thought about that. Would they rather play without fans or not play at all? And they said they still would rather play. Of course, they would love for the fans to be there. But they know that they can't play in their cities, in their regular arenas, in their stadiums. And people are figuring out, where is it going to be? And I think the last rumor, one of the official rumors I heard, I'm not sure what an official rumor versus a rumor is, but you know what I mean, somewhat legitimate rumor, is that the NBA might resume its season in Disney World, of all places. That Disney World has this big sports complex with a lot of basketball courts, and everyone is going to basically go there, and I assume get tested prior, and be quarantined there and not be allowed to leave until the season concludes. And obviously it's going to be very strange. You're going to see potentially, let's say, a game-winning buzzer-beater shot, and nobody's going to be cheering except for maybe 10 people over there, 10 people on the side. The announcer, I was thinking, let's say at the beginning of the game, like, and now, like, that whole thing, like, is there even a point to do that? Like, people aren't really there to cheer. People aren't around. It's going to be very strange. And one of the important lessons from it is the importance of an environment and how much an environment has an effect on what's going on. That the fact that they're not going to be fans there, the fact that they're not going to be in their hometown, their home, and their home court, it makes things very different. Really, the game is exactly the same. The dimensions of the court are identical. The minutes of the game, the players, everything's the same. But the venue and where it takes place, just that difference, and the fact that there won't be fans there, is going to make it drastically different. There's a midrash that says that there are three components that were essential at the giving of the Torah. Fire, water, and the midbar. And the source for the fact that the Torah was given in the Midbar is from the beginning of this week's Parsha, Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe b'Midbar Sinai. Hashem spoke to Moshe, Hashem gave over the Torah to Moshe b'Midbar Sinai. So the question is, why is it that Hashem chose the Midbar to be the location where the Torah was given? Now, we know this, of course, as fact. We know Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim. And, right, we know we are coming to Shavuos, right? Just shortly, a few months later, they got the Torah. So why did Hashem give it there, though? What would have potentially made more sense? Wait till they go to Eretz Yisrael. If you think about it, firstly, they were supposed to go in right away anyway. They only were there for 40 years because of the Chetim Raglim. So they were supposed to go there anyway. And there were plenty of mitzvos that, when the Torah was given at Har Sinai, there were plenty of mitzvos they couldn't even fulfill until they got to Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvos Atzeres Baretz. So why not wait till they get there and then you give the Torah and now you could actually do everything? So what lesson is there that Hashem chose to give us specifically in the Midbar? In a place where there's literally nothing. There's no life. There's no vitality. There's a marathon. Really, it's like I'm not sure if it's called a super marathon, but I'll make up that term. A super marathon called the Marathon de Sabla. It is coined as the toughest foot race on earth. It's 156 miles that the participants run over the course of 7 days in the Sahara Desert. And it is one of those events where certainly you have to be crazy to want to do it, to run for a week in a desert in the boiling, boiling sun, 156 miles. There are, I think I saw about 800 or so participants in a given year. A few hundred drop out and don't even make it to the end. And of course, it's obviously tremendous relief for anyone who's able to even survive it, anyone who's able to actually accomplish this. Some people do it for charity, for tzedakah. Some people do it for the thrill. And there are a few people who probably train who do it to try to win. and it's wild. And one of the reasons why it's wild is not just the fact that it's 156 miles and it's over 7 days. That, of course, is crazy to think that people would run that distance, but the fact that they're doing it specifically in the desert. Because when you're in the desert, things are much, much more difficult in terms of its terrain, in terms of trying to just live. Nobody lives in the desert. People don't live there. Of course, there's some, technically, but like, people don't live there. Anyone who lives there is because they can't live anywhere else for some reason. But it's a place where there's almost no animal life, there's no water, and there's just nothing. There's nothing there, and it's almost impossible to survive. For anyone, for animals, and certainly for human beings. Because of that, Bnei Yisrael were supposed to realize that Hashem was the sole reason that they were able to survive in the desert for as long as they did, certainly the 40 years. Hashem was the one who provided the Be'er Miriam for them to have water, the man for them to have food, the Anei HaKavod, which miraculously flattened the surface. They never had to walk up or down. Everything was smoothened out. It killed all the snakes and scorpions for them. Life was made. They didn't have to worry about anything. And without that, without Hashem taking care of them, there's no way they would survive in the Midbar for even a small fraction of that time. Rabbi Tal Rudinsky in the Sefer Mishkan Batzal explains that Hashem chose to give the Torah in the desert to teach the lesson that just as Bnei Yisrael can't survive in a desert for even a short moment without Hashem, so too the Jewish people won't be able to survive without the Torah. The Torah itself is our vitality. The Torah itself is our life. Gemara in Brachos and Samach Aleph tells a story that the Romans announced that anyone who teaches Torah, is caught teaching Torah, is going to be put to death. And Rabbi Kiva defied this edict. Rabbi Kiva was teaching Torah, and he was asked, as Talmidim, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Don't you know if they find you, they're going to kill you? And he said to them the following mashal. He said, there was a fox walking by the bank of the river, and he saw a fish going from side to side, swimming quickly. And he asked the fish, what are you swimming from? And the fish responded, I want to escape the nets of the fishermen. They're trying to catch me. And so the fox said, so you know what? You know what you should do? Come out here to dry land. The fishermen aren't able to get you here. Their boats can't come here. And the fish said, are you the fox? Aren't you supposed to be clever? You think I'm a fool? I know that if I come out here, I'm not going to survive for even a second because water is the only way I'm able to live. Rabbi Kiva said to his Talmidim, he says, even though there's this decree, he says, the reason why we're alive is because of the Torah. And if I stop teaching and learning Torah, then I have no chance of surviving. No chance whatsoever. And as we approach Shavuos, in just over a week from right now, it's important to think about and to realize what the Torah means to us. What the Torah means to us individually, and of course what it means to us as a nation, as a people who keep it. Certainly not just some book, certainly not just even specific laws that we have to do. But it's mamish kihim chayinu baruch yaminu. It's mamish our life. And it's not just what gives us chiyos and makes us, let's say, even feel good and excited about, but it's literally the reason we're alive. By keeping the Torah, by serving Hashem, by having meaning in life. And without that, we would mamish be nothing.